And bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And well, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of John Schroeder, who is the founder of the Creation Science Seminars. And we're going to be talking about his book, Darwinism, Sorcery in the Classrooms, What American Public School Kids Are Learning and Not Learning About Molecule to Man Evolution. So with that as a background, John Schroeder, thank you very much for being with us here.
You're welcome, sir. I'm glad to be here.
All right, fine. How did you get started on your effort to educate people and write something that's simple and yet, of course, is conclusive enough, but that even intelligent and well-educated people would recognize that certainly Darwinism is a fraud aimed at destroying our belief in God with no scientific basis at all?
Well, Stan, I have to say that about 20 years ago, we had a very dear friend who had a son, and I loved that boy, and didn't know him very well, but I loved that boy. And one day, and I can't really say exactly when it was, his mother was crying and told my wife that he had come home from school and declared that he no longer believed in God. And when we began to run that down, we found that he was in the University of Georgia. He was taking biology. It was, I believe, second year biology in the university. And the professor had apparently worked him over pretty good and convinced him that everything was naturally in existence. Evolution was the cause, and God was out of it. And I can't tell you how that disturbed me. I had had a brush with evolution back in the University of Xavier University in Cincinnati when I went there, and I just simply said it was a joke. I had majored in physics. And I knew that the second natural law said that all things deteriorate and eventually die. And for me, that's the exact opposite of evolution. Evolution says everything gets better and better. Given enough time, it's going to change into something brand new. And that, to me, was a terrible flash, and my mind could not accept evolution and the second natural law in the same mind without saying one or the other's wrong. So with that background in physics, I started to work on that lad and pointed out to him the impossibility of evolution. And praise be to God, we were able to salvage that boy and convince him that the professor was the one who was lying and not God. And that's really how I got involved. And then I began to research evolution and in real depth, and eventually, of course, put together the program, Creation Science Seminars, which I haven't done any recently, but we did a lot of them with churches and schools. I even got into the public school here in Georgia and was able to spend an entire year in a separate class going through the evolution impossibility.
And, of course, the incredible thing is, of course, that the evolutionists do not want the children to have any idea that there is a God, a creator. In fact, they even when they talk about the Declaration of Independence, they leave out the part about the creator. There is, I believe, an organized effort to destroy the faith of our people. Because if you destroy the faith of our people, then, of course, the alternative is to embrace socialism, government, and man himself being God. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is John Schroeder, and he's written a fascinating book called Darwinism, Sorcery in the classrooms. What American public school kids are learning and not learning about molecule to man evolution. And, of course, John has given a number of seminars through the years. He calls them the creation science seminars, and he's given those in schools all throughout the South. But people have to really understand the reason that they want to teach evolution is because they want to destroy the faith of our children, and why any Christian who loves their children would send them to public schools where they will wipe out their faith sooner or later. And if they don't do it in the public schools, they're going to do it in the colleges. That's the purpose of education, not scientists, not to learn about, facts, but be indoctrinated with an intense hatred of God and to be turned against God, family, and country. And they've done such a good job of this. But really the key to that is to destroy their faith in God, and that's what Darwinism is all about. So how do you approach the issue, John? How do you get people to begin to question? Because it's so difficult, I'm a victim of a liberal education as well, and I'll never forget how difficult it was for me to unlearn everything I'd learned, in the upper stages of my education in college and even in medical school. How do we unlearn the lies we've been told?
Stan, that's as tough an objective as anybody could possibly be facing. Way back in 1933, I believe it was, the secular humanist religion was founded. It has been recognized as a religion by the United States Supreme Court. One of the founders of that organization wrote in the original Humanist Manifesto, or wrote about it, I should say, he said, "Education is the most powerful ally of humanism, and every American public school is a school of humanism. What can the theistic Sunday schools, meeting for an hour once a week, and teaching only a fraction of the children, do to stem the tide of a five-day program of humanistic teaching?" That was written way back in 1933 by a guy named Potter, I believe his name was, and it was a diabolical plan to indoctrinate
America's... Hold that. We'll be right back in just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly John was just telling us about something that had been written back in the 30s by one of the men who was involved with the humanist movement. And, of course, we had the Humanist Manifesto that was written at that time, earlier than that. But it was basically pointing out the fact that what chance does the child have? We've got them all the time in our schools, and we can indoctrinate them. And certainly send him to this Sunday school, a small number of them, for an hour or so a week, is not going to be able to undo what we're going to be able to do with their minds. Would that be pretty much what he said?
That's what he said.
All right.
And unfortunately, Stan, that's exactly what has happened.
And, of course, the parents are allowing this because they're sending
yes.
the kids to public schools. And I realize it's difficult for parents, when both the husband and wife have to work today, but... if there's any way that you can get your child out of the government schools, because believe me, you're not getting a free education. You're getting a free indoctrination.
Absolutely.
And you're turning your child against God. There's no way that they can possibly stand up against those teachers, because they've got all the answers. And that's why John's book is so important, because it gives you some things to think about on the other side. So, John, you pick up the story. How do you begin to reach the children and convince them that they've been lied to by their teachers?
You've really got to get them out of that. You've got to get them out of that environment, Stan. You've got to be able to zero in on the fact that evolution is an impossibility. You've got to, number one, take them through some of the ridiculous statements that are made. For example, the fossil record supposedly reveals evolution. The fossil record is a record of death, not life. It's a record of living organisms that once were here. A lot of them have disappeared. Some are still with us, and they're exactly the same way as they were when they were found in the fossil record. The first area I think that you have to attack is that area of the fossils. You've got to show them, look, the fossils of every family, every phyla, is found in the very first so-called rock formation, the lowest rock formation. Everything's there. Nothing. The fossils don't show any kind of evolutionary progress.
Well, do you get into the fact of what caused the fossils? There has to be some sort of a cataclysmic event to, you know, kill these little critters and then bury them over with sediment, you know, and then, of course, probably bury them over with water as well. But there has to be a cataclysmic event, because when critters die today, they don't turn into fossils.
They've got to be
buried with sediment, you know, on top of them, and then they can fossilize. But you go ahead.
One of the interesting things, and really the foundation for Darwin, was with Lyell way back before Darwin, who came up with the idea that the crust of the Earth has been laid down in layers one at a time, with roughly a million years in between times. Well, that sounds very logical. You know, it sounds very possible, because today sedimentary layers are very slowly built up. Excuse me, if it built up at all. But the fact of the matter is that the crust is 22 miles thick. Excuse me. And in order for a single layer to have been laid down to begin with, where was the other, and say it was a mile thick, where was the other 21 layers stored? In other words, what they are telling us and what they're telling the kids is something that was impossible. You could not lay down a single sedimentary rock layer under 21 other layers. Are you following me? Am I making sense?
Well, the thing is that you would have the some sort of an event occur, and then, of course, you would have the critters die and be buried and then covered over with the sediment. But where
were the other sediments while that first layer is being formed?
Well, weren't they formed in subsequent years? That would be the thing. That's what they're going to tell us. You have the first layer, and then you have more layers laid down, and then more layers laid down, one after the other.
But where did the layers come from?
I don't know. That's what you want to tell me.
Well, they never explain that, and of course it's an impossibility. The entire crust was pulverized by the flood, by the volcanic activity that burst up from underneath at the same time that the rain began. And that is exactly how 22 miles of crust was turbulently changed completely and rolled over, and tidal waves and everything during the flood. That's how 22 miles of thick sedimentary rock got laid down, and it got laid down in layers because they tend to separate by the size of the granules. And that's why you have different layers. You have shale, and you have sandstone and limestone. And that's how it got laid down, but it got laid down all at once. You didn't have a time when there was a million years while one layer was being lithified, and then another layer a million years later. I mean, where was that other layer? Where were all those other layers while one layer was being laid down? It's an impossibility, and you've got to show kids that it can't be done. Take 15 books and put them on a table. Now tell me, how do you get the one book on the bottom there for a million years? Where are the other 14 books?
All right, fine. Well, Chris, one of the points that you make that is, where did life come from? And you talk about from molecule to mankind. And, of course, where did the atoms come from? And, of course, the evolutionists have no idea. Where did matter come from? Where did this perfectly organized concept of molecules come from? And then where did life come from? And, of course, you talk about two men, Miller and Urey, who actually did some sort of a scientific experiment many years ago where they took methane and water and I don't know, a couple of other things, and they passed like a current through it, and they created amino acids. And then they say, well, see, now we can create life. How do you respond to that statement?
Well, of course, they didn't create life. They created a few amino acids, and they were the wrong amino acids. All of your amino acids in the various organisms are left-handed. Any right-handed amino acids are fatal. So everything has to be left-handed. First of all, they try to recreate an atmosphere that can't be recreated, Stanley. It's an impossible thing. Nobody was here when God created the universe, and for them to try to simulate that in a laboratory is really pretty ridiculous. But they did not at all create life. They created some amino acids, and amino acids by themselves are not life. They are considered biologic, but they're certainly not life nor living. And as I said, the acids that they created were useless. I mean, they gave up. That was done way back in 1953, and it's never been attempted again because it was really a defeat. And it's still in the biology books, and they still brag about the fact, but certainly that's not life.
All right, fine. Of course, there's really so much out there. We're constantly told that they're on the verge of being able to create life out of nothing. But, of course, they're going to have to create it. In other words, it's not going to occur spontaneously. They're going to have to be scientists using their minds and using all sorts of amino acids. And there's no evidence that they've ever done it. There's no evidence they're going to be able to do it. But if it is done, it will be done by men doing it. In other words, there is a creator. Maybe it isn't a god, but it's a human intelligence. But, of course, they want us to believe that life developed without any sort of intelligent design. And that's completely impossible.
Of course it's impossible. I mean, chance is an interesting word that they live by in the evolution business. And really, there is no such thing as chance, Stan. It's something that we used to describe something that happens out of the ordinary or that's unexpected. But God knows everything that's going to happen from beginning to end. There is no such thing as chance. It's all set in concrete. And this business of a chance occurrence of two chemicals, for example, they're onto this now these days, that a couple of chemicals got together accidentally, and they began to vibrate and replicate, and they did all this. And see, that's impossible. It can't be done. You could put 5,000 chemicals together and do all kinds of things with them, but they're never going to turn into life, because life is life.
And, of course, the whole idea of spontaneous development of life just doesn't take place. At one time it was believed, you point out in your book, but, you know, Pasteur had come along and disproven all of those previous theories. So they knew at the time of Darwin that life did not generate spontaneously. It had to come from someplace, and they don't want to address where it came from. Well, when they run into trouble, they'll always say, well, it probably came from another planet, but then if it came from another planet or the solar system, where did the life there come from? And they want to change the subject. But, you know, I think that your points are really so well made, and one of the major ones is there is no fossil record. Certainly, Darwin said that there would have to be intermediate phases, in other words, from one species to another. And, of course, if you couldn't find those intermediate species or intermediate life forms between the species, then his theory wasn't valid. Well, they've never found them, but they always come up with some other excuse to explain how we got from being a fish to how we became a bird, to how we became a mammal. And they've got all sorts of things, but none of them are scientific. Because with science, you've got to be able to reproduce what you're talking about, and they can't do it. We'll be right
back.
That's
absolutely right.
Well, John, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, Let me. Are you familiar with the bed of Proskutus?
With what now?
The bed of Proskutus.
No, I'm not. So
he
you
was
tell
a
us.
Highman. He was a highwayman in Greek legend.
All right.
He had a bed, and when people came by, he measured them against that bed, and if their legs were too long, he chopped them off, and if they were too short for the bed, he stretched them so that they would fit still the bed. Of course, it always killed them. Evolution is kind of like that, Stanley. They fit anything that can make any kind of sense at all. They make it fit evolution. It's the strangest non-science called a science that I've ever come across. For example, in court orders or in court cases where we have tried to get just the negatives taught in the school, they keep saying that it's all religious, but it isn't. The second law of thermodynamics, for example, the second natural law, it has nothing to do with religion. The law of cause and effect has nothing to do with religion. The law of biogenesis that says life only develops from other life, that's not religious. And yet the court system keeps preventing the teaching of these negatives from being put in place. And it's very difficult for Christian parents to have their kids go into a place where they're, like you said earlier, it's an indoctrination, it's not an education.
And, of course, they will not allow even the alternative to be presented. Why? Because it was presented why I think the children would hear it and they would believe it, and they do not want the children to believe that God created the heaven and the earth, or even that there's a possibility. And the fact that these people say this is scientific and it's been proven, and as you point out so well in your book, to be scientific you have to be able to create an experiment and you have to be able to reproduce it. How can you prove anything that they say? It's all supposition, everybody says it, but how could you ever prove anything that, you know, nobody was here at the time when life began? Certainly, they can have the fossils, but the fossil record only tells us there's been life there in the past. It doesn't tell us how long it was, ago it was. And basically, of course, they date the layers by the fossils, and they date the fossils by the layers. And, of course, that certainly is not a very scientific method of doing this. This is one of the greatest frauds ever perpetrated on intelligent people.
It's an absolute hoax, Stan, and one day it will all come out. One of the areas that I have in the creation seminars that we develop, and that is the fact that they can't prove anything. Everything is, what evolution really is it's an opinion factory. And every opinion that fits in with the evolution theory gets mentioned, it gets taught, but anything that is negative is completely forgotten. For example, when it comes to this matter of the layers.
Hold that, just we're going to go, yeah. We're going to be back and bring our stations on board.
Okay.
Hold the telephone just a little further away from you.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Schroeder. We're talking about his book, Darwinism, Sorcery in the Classroom. And John is simply pointing out that these scientists are not scientists at all. They claim to be scientists. They claim that science has proven this, but they really haven't, because they can't use a scientific method to do this. It's really a matter of faith on their part. And just as a Christian believes in, you know, that God created the heaven and earth, so the scientists believe that there is no God. And so, since that is not an alternative, they have to come up with a theory. But it's all a theory. It's not proved by the fossil record. And I can remember when I went to college, why we were told that they'd found the missing link. They'd found the missing link, and every scientist believed that, and every college student was taught that. And it was the Piltdown Man. And none of the scientists were honest enough to check it out until eventually somebody went over there and actually looked at the skull and the jaw they had, and they found out that the teeth had been filed down, the bones had been stained, and it was all fraudulent. And all of these scientists were wrong. But then did they back away from their theory? Oh, no, well, that was a fraud, but we know, of course, that evolution is a fact. And the fact that this is being taught in our schools as fact and not as a theory simply reflects the corruption of our school system that is not teaching our children, it is indoctrinating our children. Well, John, what results did you have when you were in the schools there in Georgia and when you were actually putting on these seminars?
We had excellent results with the kids that actually came to the extra class. It was always after the hours. And we had excellent response and results with those kids. The problem was that we just couldn't attract enough of the kids. You know, in a school where there are 800 children and you only get 30 that come to that class, it's rather disappointing. But I will say we had very good success with those kids who did come. One of the things that we worked with the children is this matter of the DNA molecule. Every organism has a DNA molecule that is really the program that it runs by. It's programmed by its DNA molecule, and the RNA molecule is a replicator of the DNA. The thing that has bothered me and that we try to get across to the people in the seminars and in the book is the fact that a DNA molecule is like a printed page. Once it's printed, it's there. You're not going to add anything to it. You can't add anything to it. And so a DNA molecule, when an organism is conceived, it has the complete information for that organism through maturity right through to death. It has no way of adding any additional information. Evolution says that things get better and better through natural selection of favorable mutations. Well, mutations are not favorable, Stan. There are none. They never can name a favorable mutation. They just aren't any. So natural selection really has nothing to pick from, and there is no way for an organism to increase the information on the DNA molecule. So how does an organism like a reptile add the information? Where does that new information come from? What we're really talking about is perpetual motion. You're familiar with perpetual motion. It's supposed to be a thing generating enough energy to keep itself going and do its work. And the United States Patent Office says there is no such thing as perpetual motion. And if you're going to try to patent something, you better have a working model. And I've got that in the book, by the way. But you see, a DNA molecule has its information complete at the time of inception. Evolution, including the great Richard Dawkins, who wrote that awful book, The God Delusion, even he can't explain how the DNA molecule gets its new information that it has to have for an organism to get better and become something new. It's just an impossibility.
Well, of course, the thing is that when you're a college professor and you've written all these books, you appear to be much of an authority.
Oh, yeah.
But these people cannot admit that they don't have the answers among themselves. They'll admit they have lots of questions as how this all came about. But, of course, I think it takes an awful lot of faith to believe that we have the evolution, the progressive evolution down through the centuries, or down to really through the millennium, because it takes an awful long time to evolve, and yet no intermediate fossils. How could that possibly be? And how did the DNA change? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Schroeder, and we're talking about his book, Darwinism, Sorcery in the Classroom. Go right ahead, John.
The DNA molecule is... The evolutionists were very hopeful that microbiology would prove that evolution has occurred. The exact opposite has happened. The DNA molecule, the more they have studied it, the more they realize that there's no way that an organism can add anything to the DNA molecule that is the programmer that keeps it going. There's just no way to do it. And without a way to get new information, how are you going to change fur into skin? You know what I mean? How are you going to change a beak into a mouth? How are you going to change a leg or talons into fingernails? These things would take tremendous amounts of new information. Not only that, but there has to be a devolution at the same time. If an organism is changing from, let's say, a frog into a squirrel, at the same time it's supposedly developing into a squirrel, it's got to be devolving as a frog. And there comes a point where there's a crossover. And this is theoretical because nobody has ever proved any evolution, but there would have to be a crossover point where the frog was no more a frog, but it still wasn't a squirrel. It would die, Stan. It could not go on. You see what I mean?
Well, I certainly agree, and certainly the fact that you always have to have two sexes when you get into the development, and how do you have male and female, and certainly that can complement one another in the reproductive process. The idea that this could have happened spontaneously just is beyond the possibility. There's no way that this could have. I mean, the chances of it happening are, as you say, are essentially zero, and so... And yet, of course, because they hate God and because they have this intense antagonism towards this idea that there's a creator, they have to renounce the idea of creation and try to explain an unexplainable phenomenon, which is, of course, what evolution is really all about.
Well, evolution, I have felt all along that evolution is simply a vehicle of the devil to attack the one that he hates the most. And I don't think anything is really all about evolution. I think I agree with you. It's all about getting rid of God, getting God out of people's lives. And we see what's happening in our country.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Schroeder. And, Sean, before we go on, do you have a website or a telephone number you'd like to get out where people might be able to get the book?
I would suggest that they would go to Living Waters Publishing and just type in my name and my books will come up.
All right, Living Waters Publishing?
Yeah, Living Waters Publishing. And if they type in my name, John Schroeder, my books will come up, three of them.
All right, publishing.
And then they can order them, yeah.
What about Fenestra Books?
Fenestra Books is really a subsidiary of Wheatmark, and they can also pull it up on Wheatmark Publishing.
All right, fine. That's Wheatmark, you call it?
Yeah, Wheatmark.
M-A-R, Wheatmark. Okay, fine.
Wheatmark, yeah.
All right, fine. Well, certainly John was saying in the break there that he really felt that this was a satanic movement, that this was really an effort to drive people away from God, and I certainly believe this is absolutely right. Incidentally, somebody wanted to know how your name was spelled. It's S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. And John is the founder of the Creation Science Seminars. Well, what about all these prehistoric men? They tell us about the Neanderthal man. The Neanderthal man was supposedly one of the transitions from the ape to the human being. Would you like to talk a little about that?
Well, you had the Peking man, and you had the Piltdown man.
The Java man. I remember
the Java man. Well, see, the evolutionists have pulled the wool over people's eyes, and people don't have enough interest, really, to look behind the scenes. You see, you couldn't have a missing link between a monkey and a man. What you'd have to have would be about 100 million missing links between a monkey and a man. And so when they come along with this foolishness about they've found this new Rampathicus, if I can even pronounce the name, that's just a monkey. And it's they found the bones of another monkey, and they infer that this is another missing link. What it really is just another monkey. And all of these so-called men that they found, they were really just human beings that were different shapes and sizes than we are today. It's rather strange that most of them, in fact, Nebraska Man was developed from the tooth of a pig. That's all they had was the tooth of a pig.
And, of course, basically what they did is they had created pictures of this man. They even created replicas there at the University of Nebraska that shows you this man, you know, and he had sort of the big, heavy eyebrows and sort of a heavy forehead and bushy hair, and he was wearing animal skins. This was all contrived. It was created from a tooth of a pig, and eventually they found the rest of the pig. But you see, the thing is that people were gullible enough to believe it. This wasn't science. This was fraud.
That's right.
And so much of what's going on in our universities today and in our schools is just plain fraud. In fact, they in many of the textbooks, even to this very day, they have these pictures, and I saw them when I went to school, and it shows the embryo of a human, the embryo of a pig, the embryo of a fish, and they all look very, very similar. The trouble is that those pictures were discredited 120 years ago, and the man who, of course, was... who drew them was actually thrown out of his university.
That's correct.
And yet, of course, they took over.
They still use them in
the textbooks today because the picture is so powerful, and they're simply lying to our children. Go ahead.
Well, also the horse series, I think you'll remember that from your education. The horse series has been discredited 40, 50 years ago, but it still appears in the biology books that the kids are studying in the schools today. There's no such thing as a horse series. All those were different animals.
little minor Shetland ponies, and you have big gray horses, and you have all sorts of sizes of horses, but they're still horses.
Yeah, it's the same thing that we see today. We see exactly what Darwin saw on his beagle trip. He saw finches. And all the finches were finches. And all the turtles that he saw were turtles. And all the pigeons that he ever bred were pigeons. He never, ever saw anything but variation within species. The DNA package that each one of us has in us has enough variables in it that we come out tall, small, fat, skinny, smart, dull. You know, there's an endless variety of human beings. None of us ever looks exactly alike except when you have a couple of twins. The same goes for animals. You know, I don't know how many breeds of canine there is, but gosh, you go down the street and see 20 people walking dogs and they all look different, but they're all dogs and they're all interfertile. This variation of species got Darwin all confused and flummoxed. He got all confused by that. He couldn't decide whether a chipmunk was an evolving squirrel or whether it was a separate organism. And the result is that because he had some personal tragedies in his family, and he didn't want to believe in God anymore, so I think he came up with evolution.
Well, you know, I have a copy of The Origin of the Species, and in that book, in the last chapter, he talks about the Creator. So whatever happened, you know, we've heard all sorts of explanations for it, but I have the book, and of course the people who are Darwinists hate that book, because in it, Charles Darwin talks about the Creator, and the Creator, of course, is God. Have you ever heard that story? Because I have the book.
I have read. The dullest book I ever read was Origin of Species.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. He refers to the Creator and tries to really do away with him completely, and he can't. And he really never could in his private correspondence. He was always vacillating back and forth and asking the people that he corresponded with whether he was right or wrong about there being no God and the evolution thing. As a matter of fact, in the sixth edition of his book, the sixth printing of his book, he went completely away from the mechanism that he had come up with, which was natural selection of favorable mutations. And what he did was go back to Lamarckism, which says that acquired characteristics can be inherited. He got all confused. And nobody ever tells the children in the school system anymore that he backed off of his so-called mechanism of natural selection of favorable mutations. And that's not good, you know. The kids ought to know.
Well, of course, but they're not there to learn the truth. They're there to be indoctrinated and to have their faith in God destroyed. That's what it's all about.
That's it.
Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest, of course, is John Schroeder. His book is Darwinism, Sorcery in the Classrooms. And our classrooms across America are being used to undermine and destroy the faith of our children. They're showing them against God and family and country, and they're really doing a pretty good job. Well, you see, there are so many other things that they're brought out in as arguments for Darwinism. Would you like to cover some of those others and then how you would refute them?
Well, let me see. The missing link thing has always been a key element that they've been able to get away with. And, of course, as I pointed out a few minutes ago, you can't have a missing link between an organism and a new organism. You've got to have literally thousands of missing links. In the fossil record, you should be able to find literally hundreds of the same organism in different stages of development into a new organism. And the fact is they've never even found a single example of an organism in transition, transmuting from one to the other. And they continue to dwell in the publications, in the textbooks, on this matter of the fossil record. And, you know, if you tell people a lie long enough, they will believe it. And so you have people that are believing that the fossil record shows evolution, and it doesn't. It shows death. And it shows, everything but evolution.
But the thing is that there are no transitional forms. This is the problem that they have. So let's go to James, and he's calling from Ohio. Hi, James. How are you doing? Do you have a question?
I'm really enjoying your show, brother, and I have a comment that I would like your guest to comment on, because I always try to argue against evolution, and I find one of the inherent contradictions of the evolution doctrine is that on the one hand they will tell you it's survival of the fittest, meaning that, you know, only the strong survive and the lesser offshoots die out because of survival of the fittest, but that is inherently a contradiction of their other thing that they will try to tell you, which is that you have all these offshoots that mutate into other species, you know, the way a frog turns into a human being, and yet those offshoots that are supposed to develop into new species is contradicted by their other tenet that it's survival of the fittest, and those offshoots are supposed to die out because only the strong survive.
All right,
could you have your guest address what I think is another contradiction of evolution?
Well, let's go ahead and get the first one. John, how would you respond? Because, of course, what James is basically saying is that, you know, if it's the survival of the fittest, then why do we still have frogs? I mean, if it, you know, and so why do we still have ants around there? They're not very well fit to survive. So it's really survival of the fittest. Why do these, all these lower forms still persist on? And yet, of course, we have mankind at the top of the chain. How would you respond to that?
Well, the way I respond is this. Darwin, when he came up with his survival of the fittest, put himself right in the middle of a serious problem. And that problem is this. Evolution is supposed to be a positive, progressive, getting better and better. You know, the old line, everything's, what is it, what was it there? I'm getting better and better every day. That's supposed to be evolution according to Darwin. But the survival of the fittest brings into the equation the matter of death.
Now, that was actually what I was trying to convey.
That's right. I knew what he was trying to convey.
Yeah,
death is the exact opposite of evolution. You can't have the two in the same place.
That's what I was... What I said was actually mischaracterized. I wasn't meaning to say, why do the frogs still live when we've evolved into humans when it's survival of the fittest? What I was trying to get you to understand, and I think you do understand it, distinguished guest or esteemed guest, which is that their own doctrine contains this inherent contradiction that on the one hand they would have you believe that only the strong survive, but on the other hand, they would have you believe that rather than those offshoots dying out in the survival of the fittest, they would have you believe that those offshoots mutate and become new species in their theory of evolution. And you can't have it both ways. And I think your guest understands that's the contradiction that I think lay at the heart of the evolution doctrine. And that's what I wanted him to comment on. And he did a good job just now. I'm glad you understand what I was trying to explain.
Okay, fine. Did you have another question, James, before we let you go?
No, thank you. And God bless you both. You're doing good work, sirs.
Hey, thanks very much for
being with us. Okay, have a nice night.
You're more than welcome. And again,
James,
I know
James is one of the few people that understands the chief contradiction to evolution, and that is evolution is supposed to be a progressively good thing, life. It's all about life and life getting better and improving and changing into new things, when the fact of the matter is that death and evolution are mutually exclusive. You cannot have evolution and death in the same ballpark.
And, of course, you point out that the second law of thermodynamics shows that things are progressively deteriorating. They're not improving at all, but everything is progressively deteriorating. And, of course, if that's true, then why would we have things evolving to a higher level? You would think that would be evolving to a lower level.
Can you imagine a student in grade school, Stan, and this is part of the evolution plan. They get these kids terribly confused. A child sees death all around him. I mean, from the time you're 5 or 6 years old, you know what a graveyard is and you know what a funeral home is. And you see a little dog dying, and you see death and deterioration. You don't see automobiles getting better. You don't see homes getting newer. You see everything going the opposite direction. And here you're going to school, and they're telling you that the exact opposite is how you got here. That death had nothing to do with it, everything got better and better. But you cannot, James was absolutely right, you cannot have evolution in the same ballpark with death. One or the other has to go, and of course, death has been here since the beginning. That's what the fossil record really is. It's a record of death, not life. And that was a wonderful question. That young man he knows more about evolution than most people ever know.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been John Schroeder, and we've been talking about this whole evolution scam, and it is a scam. But, of course, it is being pushed by the great tax-exempt foundations. It's being pushed by the elite. It's being pushed by those who would destroy the faith of our children in God. And that's what it's really all about. And it is so unscientific. And whether it be the Piltdown Man, which was a fraud, and yet literally every scientist in the whole world accepted that for a period of, 40 or 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And where was the scientific questioning? Nobody bothered to even look at the bones to find out that they'd been died and that the teeth had been filed down. And I think it was the jaw of an orangutan, the head of an, I've forgotten, the skull of an ape, something like that. It was just totally, unscientific at all. And if our scientists are so stupid that they would accept something without challenging it, well, of course, that speaks very, very poor of the science and the quality of the people we have teaching in our universities today. Or maybe they're not teaching. Maybe they're just indoctrinating. Once again, would you like to get out the name of the place where people can get your books, John?
Yeah, I would say that they could go either to Wheatmark Publishing and just type in my name, John Schroeder, in the place provided. And also, they can go to Living Waters Publishing and type in my name, and my books will come up
and
in both instances.
That's Living Waters, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Just hang on, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, John. What final thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners?
I think that one of the really great thoughts that people should have about evolution is that most of the honest evolutionists themselves know that they have horrendous problems. For example, a great evolutionist who's gone to his reward, and I'm afraid it's not the right reward, but his name was George Wald. And he was very blunt. He said, the only reason we really believe in evolution is because we refuse to believe in God. And I think that that is a sorry thing, but it exists in the evolution field with people who, for whatever reasons, have rejected God, and they don't want to be responsible to anyone but themselves. And it's very sad, because each of those people, Stan, is going into eternity just like you and I. And they are going to face the very person that they say doesn't exist, that didn't create. And when you have a document as old as the Bible, and you completely reject that, you've got some real problems when you step into eternity. And I feel very sad about those people. I would like to convert every one of them to belief in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, I would too, but we're not going to get a chance to. All we can do is do our best, and at least for the people who listen to our programs, give them the opportunity to hear the other side.
That's right.
And hopefully they will begin to realize that this is one of the greatest frauds ever perpetrated. There is no scientific evidence for evolution. There are no intermediate stage fossils, and without that, the whole theory simply collapses.
Yes, it does.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we've got about one more minute. We have a parting thought before we let you go.
I would say that the entire Big Bang theory is, as a creation thing, is ridiculous, because you have to start with matter already in existence, and I don't think we talked much about the Big Bang, but it's also a hoax. You can't have time, space, and matter existing before they existed, and in order to believe the evolutionists, that's what you have to believe, that time, space, and matter existed before time, space, and matter was created.
Well, of course, the whole thing is really so ridiculous. Where did the heavens and the earth come from? Where did the atoms come from? Where did life come from? And when they start to tell you from another planet, you know that they're really reaching. John
That's
Schroeder,
right.
Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been
thank
a fascinating
you,
hour, and we hope to have a chance to talk to you sometime later again. Good night.
Wonderful.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with John. We do have a couple of books we've been carrying for some time by my friend James Perloff. One is called A Tornado in a Junkyard. It goes into the background of evolution. And then, of course, we have another book that James wrote called The Case Against Darwin. And they're really very short books. They're right to the point. And this is a totally fraudulent concept. I mean, if you found a watch laying on the sidewalk, And somebody said, well, that probably evolved, you know. There are a lot of little pieces of metal around there, and, you know, and that's why you've got a watch. It evolved. Or the idea that you could have a tornado go into a junkyard and stir up all those pieces of metal and end up with a 747 plane. You'd say that's the craziest thing in the world. And yet, of course, the human body is far more complex than that, and human life is far more complex than that. But they want you to believe it just happened by accident. And, of course, the new information that's coming out on DNA now really, of course, points to the fact that there is a master mind behind this, the most amazing, amazing technology that has created the human genome. And yet, of course, this is all being suppressed today. And even some of the scientists are actually, as they analyze it, are coming to realize that this could not possibly have happened by accident. There had to be a creator. And that's what it's really all about. Well, let me suggest, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to read it. You also need to perhaps get a couple of the videos we carry. They're very, very professionally done. One is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And it goes into the secret societies that were in the United States long before the United States was formed. We're talking about in the 1600s. And the part that Francis Bacon played in sending many men to the United States with the idea of at one time in the future taking over America and using our military and financial power to bring about a new world government that would rule the world. The second DVD in the set is called Riddles, and of course it's the secret history of Americans' development, of the secret history of the architecture of our nation's capitals. And we certainly recommend both of those DVDs. We think they're important that you have them, that you watch them, that you understand that there really have been, since the inception of America, secret societies, and of course they're manifested in the architecture of our nation's capital. And, of course, in the makeup of today, in fact, it's very interesting that there's articles that are appearing, certainly in the controlled media, talking about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. And you've probably seen it. It is a pyramid capped by an all-seeing eye. And Condoleezza Rice is saying, oh, well, that is an American emblem. There's nothing secret about that. That has nothing to do with any secret societies. And, of course, that simply is just not true. That emblem is the emblem of the ancient mystery religions, the triangle with the glorified eye on it. And so, basically, you know, there must be very, very worried that people are beginning to wake up and understand that they put occult Luciferian emblems on the back of the dollar bill. And if you certainly want to know more about that, we have literature on the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and of course the significance of all of this, and of course it's been claimed by the Masons. But of course Masons are simply a modern day manifestation of the ancient secret societies and the ancient mystery religions. The second DVD we were talking about is Riddles in Stone, the Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 4 hours a day, and actually there's 9 hours of feed of these programs that you can pull down and listen to, and please encourage others, your friends, to listen to our program and help us get the truth out. Because truly we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And there are powerful forces that intend to have a police state in America. And you'll certainly want to get our new DVD. It's entitled Planned Police State. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.